I call this meeting of the Labor and Industry Finance and Policy Committee to order. First order of business is to approve the minutes from April 16th, 2024.
I have to move the minutes.
Representative Jordan, have you had time to review the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would make one technical correction. The organization is tending the soil, not trending the soil. Apart from that, I do believe the minutes look to be in order, and I would move their approval with that correction.
Okay. Representative Jordan moves approval of the minutes from April 16th, 2024, with the change that she mentioned. All those in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Chair Nelson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'll move House File 5217 to be re-referred to Ways and Means. And we walked through this at our last meeting, so now I'm going to move the A24-0297-DE amendment to House File 5217, and that puts, well, then we can take up the other amendments.
Okay. Chair Nelson moves adoption of the A6 amendment to the amendment.
No, the A297 is what I'm...
Oh, just kidding. Okay. Chair Nelson moves the A24-0297-DE amendment for House File 5217, which puts the amendment before us.
And now, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A6 amendment, and Ms. James could explain, walk through that and explain what that does. And my understanding is just technical pieces.
Okay, Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, so this was noted at the last hearing. There's a correction on the tending the soil appropriation to clarify that's from the general fund. There are changes to the BMS appropriation language that is consistent with the Senate. And there was also some changes related to the broadband section in ARC 8. I also think that is related to and consistent with the Senate amendment. And there is a deletion of subdivision 6 on page 77. I believe that's a technical deletion. And then the change from develop to approve was suggested by DLI at the last hearing on 37.22. That's the amendment.
Chair Nelson.
That's my amendment, and I guess if there any questions on the amendment, again, I move the A6 amendment.
Okay, discussion to the A6 amendment to the amendment. Okay, all those in favor of adopting the A6, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment to the amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A7 amendment to the amendment from Representative Schultz. Would you like to explain your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Nelson. I want to just maybe start with kind of a few clarifying things as to the A7 amendment. And so for starters, it's my current understanding of the landscape that this committee passed and sent to the General Register the fixes to the Earned Sick and Safe Time law that passed and came into law on January 1st of this last year. And while the House has not taken up that bill from the General Register, the other body has chosen to insert Earned Sick and Safe Time language into their labor omnibus bill. And so for us, I'm bringing forward an amendment to insert the changes brought both by Chair Olson and from the comments and the feedback that was received by the Department of Labor and Industry throughout the last year and through the implementation phases here in the first few months of Earned Sick and Safe Time. And I have brought forward this amendment that is the basis of the bill that we had before us before, House File 3882, which is the fix to the Earned Sick and Safe Time bill. And so with that, I have a few additional things included in the A7 amendment. Some of them are things that we have discussed before, and some of them are additional language and additional conversations that I've had both with employers and with our staff to determine kind of some of those changes. So I'm going to highlight a few of those things, and then I would love if we could have if our research team was able to help walk through some of those changes for us to the A7. So, and by the way, if you're looking at the A3 and the A7 are very similar. There's only one particular provision that is different from it. But I believe we all have copies of the A7. And that is the one that we're working from. So the quick highlights for you all, the primary points that are different from Representative Olson's underlying House File 3882 is that it includes particular and important provisions that work towards helping out our schools through the challenge of balancing the new requirements under Earn Sick and Safe Time. We're talking about additional cost savings for schools, additional flexibility. We are talking about looking at substitute teachers who fit under some specifics that Ms. James will be able to cover specifically. This also exempts firefighters as well from the, and volunteer firefighters specifically is what I should say, volunteer firefighters. And it also speaks to the requirements that an employee should have to notify their employer on the day that they would take Earn Sick and Safe Time, assuming it's not well in advance. So those are the key provisions that I wanted to mention, and Ms. James may be able to offer additional context to this, and then I have one other thing once she's finished.
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, and members, Representative Schultz went through the A7 amendment. The underlying language is the House File 3882 as introduced. And that is the one change. There are changes in the exclusions to the definition of employee, which Representative Schultz talked about. Those are at lines 5.17 to 5.22 in Section 6. There would be exclusions to the on-call firefighters, an individual whose compensation isn't affected by missing work. My understanding is someone like a coach or someone doing extracurricular activities, a short-call substitute teacher. This is someone who would work fewer than 15 days on an as-needed basis. And those are the changes to the definition of employee. There are some clarifications in terms of the use of Earn Sick and Safe Time, starting at line 6.30, there's a new paragraph F, and that just clarifies that if someone earned Sick and Safe Time before this new law went into effect, their existing PTO policy would cover the terms of that use. The new uses under the law wouldn't take place until after January 1st. On page 8, line 20, there are some changes to the notice provisions and also on 10.4. So these essentially are looking at unforeseen need for Earn Sick and Safe Time and putting some parameters on what that would look like, providing at least 2 hours of notice unless there's an exigent circumstance or emergency circumstance, and those are specified. And then there's also a change at 10.4 regarding replacement workers, and this would allow an employer to ask an employee to make a reasonable effort to find a replacement worker. Again, I think the intent is related to those exigent, unforeseen circumstances. And finally, an effective date change related to school collective bargaining agreements. That's on page 14.3, or line 14.3. And this clarifies that this law would become effective for schools based on the next collective bargaining agreement, not the existing ones. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. James? Seeing none, Representative Schultz.
Yeah, so to go back to this, I have sought to be as precise as possible to the changes that we're making that provide for more flexibility and humility, and would be very open to the discussion over any of the basis of the language here. Again, this is the original version of House File 3882, except for those particular exceptions. I am particularly centered around the one thing that I really think that we need to talk about that hasn't really been a part of the discussion with the way that earned sick and safe time has been implemented in the state. And some of you may have heard this, so I want to completely recognize that. But there are the challenge that has existed around notification from employees to employers is that, and I'm going to give an example, a manufacturing facility with 10 people that work along that manufacturing. If two people on a given day choose not to, and when I say choose not to, they may, you know, they might be sick, something may be going on in their family, a friend, relative, whatever it is, based upon the definitions of earned sick and safe time, but they don't arrive to work, that 10-man crew now has 8. And the result of not having staff on site for that purpose or during that work shift, the result is that the 8 employees who are left working on that line endure greater responsibility, and it impacts worker morale and productivity. And so my amendment here on, I believe it were on page 8 here, tries to go after that specifically. So that when we look at the 2 hours prior to when an employee is scheduled to work, that the only time at which it would be appropriate for them to use earned sick and safe time would be if they encountered a medical or transportation emergency en route to work or due to other unforeseen but emergent circumstances. And that would really help close that gap. And this is just one thing that has come forward since the implementation of earned sick and safe time. I don't think that anyone in particular intended for this to be a consequence. And this is my best attempt through the conversations that I've had both with employees and employers and with our research staff to get to that issue. And I think it's very worthy of our support. And would help us in this conversation to ensure that the House has a voice and an opportunity to talk about the concerns related to earned sick and safe time. So I would ask for your support.
Okay, thank you, Representative Schultz, for explaining your amendment. I'm sorry, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. At this time, I'm going to ask for a no vote on this amendment. Representative Olson has been working hard on getting this and working with the Senate instead of trying to make the little changes as she went along, and has been working with the Senate to try and get this bill the way she wants it. The bill is sitting on the General Register as a standalone bill, and that's at the point at this point that's where Chair Olson has asked for it to be done, and we have the conversation on that bill as a standalone. And so, again, I ask at this time, recommend a no vote on this amendment.
Further discussion to the amendment? Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz. And we got a chance to discuss a little bit of this, and I will say it's spent most of my time thinking about the rest of the bill, and since earned sick time isn't in this bill, I do think we probably will have this discussion on the floor, and so I'm glad we're not doing it. I will say that I have some substantive problems with this bill and with some of these pieces. When I think about starting with the deletion of who it eliminates from the employee category, when I think about in education finance, we talk a lot about all the adults in the building, not just the teachers, not just the paras, but the short call subs are important. And the definition of short call subs, Representative Jordan and I are on education finance. is that you're working fewer than 15 consecutive days in the same classroom. So there's a real chance, and given our staffing shortages, when we talk about subs, that you could be working a majority of the year, and often do. I mean, go into our classroom. They're looking for subs constantly. And so I think, again, if you are only working a couple of days, there's an 80-hour, until you get to 80 hours, you don't start accruing. So that will handle the people who are not, who are really working sporadically and not very many hours. But for everyone else, I absolutely think you should be able to accrue, earn save and sick time, and you shouldn't be punished because you're actually able to plug the holes that we need in our schools. The other thing is, I think that and I'm interested in what Representative Olson has to say about the notice provisions. I haven't been that deep into it. I think the current language requires or says an employer can require it as soon as practicable. You add, I think, some very specifics. But the thing that actually concerns me the most is the punitive provision at the end that sort of allow an employer to not allow them to, I'm just looking at this language is the same as it was in the, let me find the notice language. Oh, yeah. The language around a failure to provide notice in accordance with this requirement may be used as a basis for the employer to deny earned sick and safe time to the employee. That feels both punitive and gives I think the employer a lot of discretion that without learning more, I would feel really uncomfortable with. The replacement worker piece actually feels, and I think it's, right currently in the language, I think it protects employees from something that when I think about if you're using your earned safe and sick, maybe you're sitting in the doctor's office trying to navigate the labyrinth that is our for-profit private health insurance system on the phone, and an employer is requiring you to find a sub or a replacement worker. I mean, there is this sort of, I think the language says they may request, so some employers might not, but this gives them the ability to do that. And the request of an employee to make reasonable efforts when you're in that stressful situation, like, again, what this language I think is trying to do is saying it can't be on the employee to do the job of HR. It's actually on the job of the employer. And so that piece concerns me. And then the last thing, and I think I'd love if you had to hear from Representative Schultz about what you're intending to do with this language, but on the effective date, what it feels like it does is just sort of treats public employee, sort of school workers who are in a collective bargain agreement different than everybody else. And maybe I'm reading that wrong, but as I look at sort of there's an effective date that's been in the statute since we passed it, and then it has basically a carve out that extends the effective date for school collective bargaining agreements. So that would seem to me the set of workers who are school workers in collective, and I'm not sure why we would treat those workers any differently. And so that would be another reason that I have deep concerns with this. But I would love to hear, sort of especially in that last piece, what specifically you are intending to solve and do.
Representative Schultz, response.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Greenman, and number one, I'm going to start with a whole lot of thank yous, both from Ms. James and the team for and just allowing us to have this good and hearty conversation. I think this is really important to the people of Minnesota, and Representative Greenman, I appreciate the conversations that you and I have had, and I want to say that from my perspective, like, I'm here to help find the right language that's going to get us to a place that is the right fit for Minnesotans. And as we discuss this bill, I'm happy to kind of go through the points that you talked about. Maybe I'll work in reverse order a little bit. My understanding of the way that if we're on page 14, if we're talking about those, the collective bargaining agreements, what this is saying is that the current collective bargaining agreements that have been agreed to, that those should remain. You know, those are essentially, if we move forward with the underlying language from Representative Olson's bill, that could result in lawsuits for us. And I think that this is the best course for us to avoid additional legal action for the purposes of collective bargaining agreements. That's what this is meant to do. In addition, because we would be holding to the collective bargaining agreements that have been signed, that would also save schools a lot of money in the meantime. It's not taking away an individual or a teacher's ability to use earned sick and safe time, but instead to hold to the contracts that have been signed. Because otherwise, if we used Representative Olson's language, it's my understanding that that would cause concern for different school districts across the state. That's my understanding of that on page 14. As it relates to kind of moving backwards, following your lead, Representative Greenman, to go to the replacement worker piece to this, this actually does allow for gray area and allow for, my understanding, allow for employers to determine and to build the policies that work best for them. And what this allows for, it allows for those employers to have employees make a reasonable effort. And they don't, if an employer chooses not to have that policy, they don't have to. But this provides that opportunity for an employer to have that, to have employees make a reasonable effort. There's enough gray area there. This isn't hard and fast. It's not must. It's not shall. This is some language that can help us breed a positive working relationship between employees and employers, and also help to ensure that when you're thinking about that manufacturing line of 10 people, if two people aren't there on that day, it's one of the best ways we can support workers is to ensure that they have someone to fill those additional two spots by calling another member of their team. Now, I think that that is something where individual businesses should be able to find what works best for them, or employers. I shouldn't say just businesses, but employers should be able to find the process that works best for them and their employees, which is what I believe the language there on page 10 gets to. I'm trying to think of Representative Greenman. I'm not sure if I covered every one of your questions, but I'll just say my understanding, and going towards the beginning of the amendment, if you look on page 5.17 to 5.22, to your point as it relates to short call subs, the way that I understand the language, and if we need additional clarity on this, I'm happy to engage in the conversation. But my understanding of the way that the language is written is that this is simply exempting short call subs who work less than 15 days a year. And others who fill in on an as-needed basis. Less than 15 days a year, right? I mean, this is even better than the original amendment that I brought when we discussed this bill originally, and provides that flexibility, right? I shared the story of school districts across the state, and especially in my own, where they said, this sort of policy for people who are coming in and helping out is causing massive, massive burdens for school districts. And this particular language should help us get to that point. In response to your questions, Representative Greenman, those are the answers that I have to the language that I brought forward. And then I will just also say to the more global conversation, Chair Nelson, Representative Greenman, and committee members, I have asked and requested the opportunity to talk to Chair Olson about this. If you remember our original debate and conversation here on this issue when we first brought up this bill, I specifically asked for that moment and that time. I have this language, and so far I have not yet had that opportunity to meet with Representative Olson, and I am looking for it. I'm asking, as a member of the legislature, as a member of the House, to be a part of the conversation that's impacting employers across the state. And I'm happy to be a part of that conversation to ensure that we get to the place that earned sick and safe time is going to be a benefit both for workers and for employers across the state. And so I'm hoping that that kind of gets to the reason why I'm bringing up this amendment today. It's because I really think that in the House that we need to have this discussion. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a question I have for Representative Schultz, going back to the issue about finding a replacement worker. I guess the question is, so an employee would have to be given a list of phone numbers of all the people that would be eligible to fill in for them. To me, that sounds more like an HR job. Otherwise, every employee would have to have every phone number of everybody that could replace them. And I think that's may or may not be going a little farther than what some employers may want to do. And I guess, how would you deal with that, Representative Schultz?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. This goes to the heart of the question, right? Earned sick and safe time as a policy is a statewide, mandate. And I'm using that as lightly as possible when I say that. But there's a difference between the HR office at Royalton Public Schools than there is at Schultz Auctioneers, where HR doesn't exist, right? And what I see, especially in rural, small town, Main Street businesses, especially small businesses and small businesses under 25 employees at a time, it's that information is readily available to the employees. And so the language that we have here on page 10 says an employer may request that an employee using earned sick and safe time make reasonable efforts to seek and find a replacement worker to cover the hours the employee uses as earned sick and safe time. Now, this is not a must. This is not a shall. This is an opportunity for us to say, hey, we know that what we do here in St. Paul isn't going to fit every instance perfectly, but this language helps us get to that place where some businesses can have that in their policy. And regardless of what happens with this amendment, businesses and employers across the state have to build a policy for their earned sick and safe time that each of their employees has to sign upon the time that they come on board. So this is language to help guide those decisions that are made depending upon the workplace setting that it is.
Mr. Chair, response.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. At this time, like I said, I think this is being worked. Some of these things are being worked on with Chair Olson. And excuse me. And at this time, I recommend a no vote on this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to just get a couple more people who wanted to speak. Lead McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to piggybacking on Representative Schultz's comments, just wanted to ask a question to you, Chair. Do you think it's a reasonable or unreasonable request that an employee gives at least a 2-hour notice to their employer?
Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative McDonald. I guess the question arises, 2-hour notice. If you wake up and you need to go to work and it's less than 2 hours before you're supposed to start, and you have a sick kid that you have to bring to the hospital, I think that would make it impossible to give a 2-hour notice. That could fall under sick and safe time. If you have your parent gets sick and has to have to go to the hospital, or your parent passes away, that would be very difficult to do that, to require a 2-hour notice for everything. So I guess that's, again, we litigated this last year when we talked about when the earned sick and safe time was there. The changes this year that Representative Olson brought forth are tweaks to it to deal with some of the issues that have come up since then. And again, I would rather have, like I said, right now that's sitting on the floor of the House, or sitting on the general register of the House, and Representative Olson's working these things through. And I don't want to, I guess, bigfoot her, the work that she's doing on this bill.
Response, Lee McDonald?
Yes. Chair, yeah, I don't want to belabor the issue because you articulated it, and so did Representative Schultz, but it's just a tool, another tool that we can put into law that it's his language is it, the employer may require. So instead of a shall, it's a may require. So it's just a, it's a, you certainly bring up a very good point about waking up 2 hours before, an hour before, and you're not feeling well. But by not having that in the law and just having it they shall, I think this Representative Schultz language just gives employers an opportunity to recover from an employee being gone. And at least a two-hour window is a very fair thing. And again, the language is may require, not shall. So I think I just hope that in the future with Representative Olson's bill going forward that that language can be added. I think that's a very fair and reasonable ask that we as lawmakers can do for our partners who employ and are, you know, adding the economic engine to our state. We need to be fair both to the employee and an employer. And that's the question I had for you.
Lee McDonald, was that actually a question you'd like me to go to the chair?
Madam Chair, no, he answered the question already. Then I followed up just with a statement.
Okay, thank you.
Unless he wants to you know, pontificate.
We have a couple more members that want to contribute, but we want to be efficient with our time. So Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just actually had a few, I think this might be for you, Marta, a few follow-up questions. Because the way I read the language with the definition of employees as it relates to short call subs is that an employee, if you work less than 80 hours in a year, you are not defined as an employee. That employee means any person who's employed by an employer, including part-time, whatever, you have to work for at least 80 hours a year. So I'm confused by, I think, a short call sub who works less than 80 hours a year, we wouldn't have to include in the exception because they wouldn't be in the definition of employee at all. What this is doing is saying a short call sub who would meet the definition of this at least 80 hours a year, and then we would exclude them. But just am I reading that right? Guess ask counsel.
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, Representative Greenman. So I think that a short call substitute teacher is sort of an example of the other of another an individual who is offered employment under Clause 4. So the other provisions of earned sick and safe time would still apply as modified in the introduced bill. It would be someone who's anticipated to work 80 hours a year. So there could be some gray area there. But certainly if someone knew they were not anticipated to work 80 hours a year, then earned sick and safe time wouldn't apply to them. They would already be excluded, if that's what the question is. But I think there's some gray area there.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The other question I had was just on the more, and this may not be fair, Marta, or Ms. James, but on the effective date piece, and what I heard is that we would be excluding collective bargaining agreements because they've already been bargained, and we would, and it's just to note that it's only school collective bargaining agreements. There's lots of other collective bargaining agreements in the both public and private sector that we wouldn't be pushing the exception out. But when we pass things like minimum wage increases, if there's a collective bargaining agreement that is less than that minimum wage, would we assume that the minimum wage increase would bring folks up, or does the collective bargaining agreement essentially lock in that lower wage until the contract is done, if that makes sense? I'm just trying to find an analogy when we pass bills that affect, that are sort of across the economy and affect workers, bringing up a standard, and then there's a collective bargaining agreement on a wage issue or issue like that. And maybe that's not a fair question. Maybe I think we will be probably talking about this on the floor at some point, but I'm interested in if you have thoughts on that.
Ms. Jane.
Madam Chair, Representative Greenman. So, of course, I can't speak to specific collective bargaining agreement terms. I think it would depend on the collective bargaining agreement. For example, if a collective bargaining agreement said you must pay minimum wage and that wasn't a defined number, then the new law would seemingly apply, I think. But I think it would depend on the individual circumstances, so I can't say for sure.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate this conversation because I think that we are probably getting ready for the conversation on the floor, which is probably where this should be, partially because I am interested in how it fits with the long sets of years-long conversation it took to get this bill in the shape that that it passed in. And I think hearing from the workers that are impacted, I will say any sort of the may versus the must, Representative McDonald, it says they may require, and the require is actually a mandatory thing. And so what we're doing is saying employers actually can create a requirement. And to me, when we talk about that, when we talk about the idea of a gray area, there is not equal power between an employer and an employee. And so the idea of a gray area, the idea that they may require something in those cases feels like what we're doing is protecting the employer over the employee in a place where they might not be equal bargaining power. And so when there's a notice issue and there's punishment that comes with it, or in the issue of as you said, the gray area around replacement workers, that to me, I will not be Representative Niska and say it leads to litigation. But it's just like, what does that mean? What does a reasonable effort mean? Can they require a reasonable effort? That makes me very concerned. And I think the original purpose of this provision to not allow it is a concern that employers were going to lean on employees in a time where they might be vulnerable, whatever else, and there might be punishment or discipline that comes with it. So I feel very strongly that we should keep the language, but especially around this, I think creating a gray area is actually makes the bill and the situation worse for everybody. So,
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I'm trying to collect my thoughts because Representative Greenman said much of what I was going to say, in particular about collective bargaining agreements and there being many, many public, the other collective bargaining agreements, including both the private and public sector. But I think the other thing to mention, though, is that the bill, Earned Safe and Sick Time, that was passed last year is a floor. You know, there is many collective bargaining agreements, especially in educational settings, that could be, in fact, more generous than what was passed into law by here. And so I don't know if the thoughts, and I'm not a lawyer, and I'll hold for applause for that, but but I don't understand this. So a district would sue itself for negotiating a contract that is more generous than the law? I don't know. I don't think that is really quite, I think that is kind of what is being implied here. But again, I just want to bring it back to the workers. It's, you know, it might say may in statute, but when you're actually sick or dealing with a parent who has taken a fall or a child that has just fallen on the monkey bars and is now on the way to the hospital, which is something that happened to me as a kid. And I think about what my parents who were in, you know, collective bargaining agreements would have to do. It might be a may in law, but it's a must when you're the worker. And so putting this extra onus on these employees to have to do this, are they going to be facing a discipline action at work if their employer determines that they didn't give enough notice? How does that work? The whole point of this law is to give workers the ability to care for themselves and their loved ones. And I think putting additional requirements on those workers when they are trying to do that is really not in the intention of this law. And I think as we continue to go back and forth on this, but this is part of Chair Olson's bill, and I really will push back on this idea that Chair Olson wouldn't meet on this. I know that she is someone who does take meetings on things, and generally, you know, when I have reached out to her, it is always with the spirit of collaboration, and she takes that very seriously and has worked with many people and has taken many, many, many meetings over the years on Earned Safe and Sick. So I really do want to praise Chair Olson for her years of dedication on this to Minnesota working families. And I know that she's always someone who will meet with workers and with employers and organizations to get the balance right, and has done so with both the bill that was passed last year and the bill that is sitting on the general register this year. So thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll yield back.
Any further discussion? I'd like to vote on this by 1:45 so we can get to the main bill. Okay.
I'll speak to it if there's no other discussion.
Okay, Representative Schultz.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Nelson, and thank you to the members of the committee here. I think that this is a hearty discussion that needs to be had here, right? That's why I brought it forward. And frankly, I think that the solutions can come from around this table having a hearty discussion like this, frankly, rather than the House floor. We all know what that can look like. And when we're looking at the future of Chair Olson's underlying bill, the result of inaction right now is that we get to be rolled by the other body. Like, hands up, we accept defeat. The House is not going to take a position on the things and the fixes that have been brought forward from employees and employers. That's what inaction looks like. And I'm, frankly, as a member of this body, elected to represent 43,500 people, like, it's incumbent upon me to come here and say, hey, this has been in law for 4 months. And there are issues. And just like Representative Stevenson likes to say, we pass a brand new statute that allows for marijuana, we're obviously going to be making changes to it. And so it's incumbent upon this committee right now to take a vote on labor policy that impacts employers and employees. And I am going to push back gently and kindly to my colleagues across the table from me that when we think about employees not showing up for work and not providing notification and not seeking to fill the gap, do you know who's hurt by that? It's the other workers. It's the other workers. And it literally impacts morale, energy, and so much else in that work environment. Doesn't matter whether that's in a school, and it doesn't matter if that's on a manufacturing site. It doesn't matter if it's at a meatpacking facility. Literally, when people don't show up for work and they don't notify the other member of their team, when that happens, it's the other workers who suffer, who have to carry a bigger amount of the weight and responsibility for productivity that day. And on top of that, if there's no notification and 8 a.m. rolls around and the employee doesn't arrive to work, and the employer, the HR, no matter whether it's a small business, big business, or school, has to do the work to find the employee to come in an hour later, 2 hours later to try and fill the gap, the result of that is higher costs. Where do those higher costs go? Those higher costs come right back to you and I. That's what happens. I think each and every one of us loves sitting around this table and being able to debate the policies that matter for Minnesotans. And the great part about it is we show up for work because we represent the citizens who sent us here. That's why it's important for us right now, given that this is incredibly important to our schools, to our workers, and to a positive working environment in Minnesota, that we find the balance. And that's what this is about. That's why I worked from Chair Olson's underlying bill. And I remain willing and accessible to Chair Olson or any member of this legislature to work to find the common ground. Because right now, a huge sector of Minnesota isn't being represented because these concerns, currently without action on this amendment, aren't being heard in the entire House of Representatives. And that's why I'd like to ask for a roll call.
All right. Having asked for a roll call, will the clerk please take the roll?
Chair Nelson.
No.
Chair Nelson votes no. Chair Berg.
No.
Chair Berg votes no. Lead McDonald.
Aye.
Lead McDonald votes aye. Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Greenman?
No.
Representative Greenman votes no. Representative Hill?
No.
Representative Hill votes no. Representative Hussein?
No.
Representative Hussein votes no. Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Jordan votes no. Representative Kozlowski?
No.
Representative Kozlowski votes no. Representative Meckland?
Yes.
Representative Meckland votes aye. Representative Myers?
Aye.
Representative Myers votes aye. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, aye.
Representative Schultz votes aye. Representative Wolgamott?
Wolgamott, aye.
Representative Wolgamott votes aye. There are four ayes and eight nays.
But there's one excuse. No. There was five ayes. Representative.
There are four ayes and
five.
It's okay. All right. There being five ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Now we will move to a vote on the DE amendment as amended. All those in favor of adopting the DE say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now we are on to House File 5217 as amended. Chair Nelson, did you have more remarks on your bill?
Madam Chair, no. We've had plenty of discussion on this, both through the year on the different bills that are in here, and on last Tuesday. So I'll renew my motion that House File 5217 as amended be re-referred to Ways and Means, and for nonpartisan staff to be instructed to make any necessary adjustments technical adjustments to reflect the will of the committee.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I just want to see if there is any further discussion on the bill after we have adopted the DE. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Nelson, the other thing that I wanted to mention as it related to Earn Sick and Safe Time, and I appreciate the discussion. Thank you to the members of this committee. Thank you for entertaining the discussion because it's worthy of us having it. But in addition to that, I wanted to mention that one of the key concerns that has happened, and some of you may have attended this, but we have had organizations that have represented employers that have had many of their days on the Hill, and they have come here throughout the entirety of session, and obviously Earn Sick and Safe Time is greatly impacting the people of Minnesota, and as a part of that, with any new government program, whether it's marijuana or whether it's Earn Sick and Safe Time or paid family medical leave, as Minnesotans are being prepared to have this as a new employment practice, a new standard, there are concerns and a lack around a lack of knowledge and education in this. And the point that I want to make is we have on this underlying omnibus bill, we're spending a whole bunch of money on one particular facility, and then at the same time potentially not doing enough to reach out to employers, and there needs to be more of that. And I'm going to make mention of that because it might take resources to do so. And so I would just highly encourage more collaboration between DLI and employers across the state of all kinds, from schools to county governments to small businesses. We need to ensure that they have the information readily accessible. What we heard in a whole amount of testimony, both oral and written testimony this year, and through the conversations we've had here at the legislature, it's that there literally hasn't been enough education, and that whether it was FAQs or the information that would impact employers as they're setting up their systems, there wasn't enough. There straight up wasn't enough. And so if we're looking at a budget target of over $9 million, my simple question is, what are we doing to make it easier for employers to understand the policies that have been put in place through a mandate and the short amount of time that they had to respond and get those policies enacted for their employees? Thank you.
Any further discussion? Lead McDonald?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Since I'm the lead, I should maybe say a few words, but Representative Schultz did a fine job, so I won't repeat what he said. But I will say this, though, is this legislature and under the trifecta, after blowing through $18 billion surplus and raising taxes another $10 billion in a budget year last year, to spend any additional money this year, in my personal opinion and many in my district that I represent that are fiscally conservative, I think it's very irresponsible that any of our respective committees should have any budget targets. We are already potentially facing a budget deficit, according to our data in 2026-27. To the amount of spending is just, it's very unacceptable, it's irresponsible, and it's gonna put us in the state in a very hard situation in 2 years. We spent enough money last year, certainly, and in the details, and many of the bills and provisions that we passed last year, we haven't even given an opportunity to work yet, and yet we still have to spend more money on and more policy. So I think I think many believe that I've heard from that it's very irresponsible for that kind of spending that'll put us into a great deficit. Someone's going to have to fix it. So that's all I have to say about that for now. And Representative Schultz did a great job. Representative Nelson, I am pleased, though, that you have one bill in here from a Republican. Praise the Lord. You know, for 2 years, not even a hearing from a Republican bill. If I am chair of this committee someday, I guarantee you that we will give hearings to our fellow friends who are on the other side of the aisle, our DFL. That's out of respect. I think it's no good whatsoever that one party wouldn't even bother giving a hearing to a fellow colleague. That's just poor governance and disrespectful, in my opinion. Maybe I'm just a nice guy. I think the Senate did the same thing when they had one majority lead a couple of years ago, but we're not the Senate. We're better than that. So with that said, Representative Nelson, you have been are a gentleman and a good man and a diplomat and a great chairman, and you're honest and fair, and other than, you know, I got no bill hearings from you, but that's fine. You did at least put Representative Nash's bill for pools into your bill. So we can take that and go swimming this summer. But thank you for your leadership and your good work. We will miss you here in your work here at the legislature. You've been a gentleman to work with. And same with the rest of the colleagues here. We've had some good banter and some good discussions, but I think we all have a respect for each other for the work that we do. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Lead McDonald. Did you want to make any closing remarks? And
no, I guess I made my closing remarks. I'll just say thank you to the Representative McDonald for his kind words. And again, I renew my motion that House File 5217, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion for House File 5217 as amended to be re-referred to Ways and Means, nonpartisan staff is instructed to make necessary adjustments to reflect the will of the committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion is adopted. Anything further before we adjourn?
Madam Chair and members, this is scheduled to be, this will be our last scheduled meeting. So I want to thank the people that have helped us run this committee, from our page Florence to Brian Basham and House TVs and their staff, to Commissioner Blissenbach and her staff, to Commissioner Viriel and the BMS staff, to our nonpartisan staff, Marta James and Justin Cope, Helen Robert, our fiscal staff, Lori Cousineau, our GOP researcher, Dave Sullivan, the DFL researcher, to our committee legislative aide, Mick Basari, and to our committee administrator, Travis Reese, who without him, and everyone who knows who's run a committee without a good committee administrator, things don't run well. And so I want to thank everybody. It's been a great committee. Both on the DFL and the Republican side, it's been great working with you all. We probably will have another unscheduled meeting at some point. The lift what?
Uber-Lyft.
The Uber-Lyft bill, yeah, Lyft Uber. I was wanting to say the TNC, but the Uber-Lyft bill is in our possession, but it's still being worked on. When there's compromise and agreed upon bill, we will be hearing that and sending it to Ways and Means from here. But at this time, we don't know when that's going to happen. Again, they're working on that. So with that, members, that's what I have. That's all I have. And thank you all for your work on this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Nelson. With that, we are adjourned.